Hey, you guys. It's Sunday.
Yeah.
How is you guys' weekend going?
All right. How many people are in there? They're coming in.
I don't know.
They're coming in. There's nine of them.
I can't.
Yeah, there's nine of them.
All right.
All right. That's good. They're already talking about wax on, wax off. All right. So we'll, all right. They're all coming in. All right. So the other day, somebody sent us a steelbook.
I think it was Louis.
I think it was probably Louis. He sends nothing but awesome movies, and he tries to send steelbooks when he can. And it sat around here for a couple months before we got around to it, because there was a bunch of other stuff in the queue. And, of course, I'm fans of the series, and we've seen every season of Cobra Kai out, too. But I hadn't seen a steelbook Blu-ray edition of this, and it looks real good. So the quality on it is good, real good. I think last time I saw this movie might have been about 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, I remember watching them. I don't remember if we reviewed it before.
No.
I kind of felt like we had, but I guess not.
I think we just watched it.
I think we watched the first two or the first three.
I think we watched all three.
We maybe did, yeah. Like a couple of years
back. The third
back.
One was getting a little rough, man.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the third one's the one where they go to...
Yeah.
Where
it wasn't bad. It's just that you could tell they were stretching the plausibility of this story. And really, the tone of it had gotten to the point where it was almost like Cobra Kai, which was kind of ludicrous and nostalgia. But I love Cobra Kai. I think it's a fucking great series.
It is.
Yeah. So the first installment in the original trilogy, I'm going to call it an original trilogy. I would say that the trilogy is fucking culturally on par in many ways with Star Wars. Mr. Miyagi is very much like Yoda. And... what's his name? It's looking a lot like Luke Skywalker in some way.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and you know, it's but seeing it again, it's a good movie. It's real good. It's now it's got a certain tone to it. All right, and you have to be in your 40s or 50s to understand that tone and really vibe with it. Although, man, some of the young people are really getting into these old tones because they were optimistic. They were stories of optimism.
Yeah, I think, and we were talking about this when we were watching it. I said, I think the reason that a lot of people our age that saw these when we were kids, like, still, you know, have a lot of fondness for them, but also people who weren't even alive, like, when these came out, still really kind of like them. I think it's just because they had, like, a real, like you said, like, an optimistic, like, earnestness to them. Yeah. Like, they're cheesy.
Yeah.
But they're kind of, they're really, like, well-meaning.
Yeah.
And inspirational, like, in a way. You know what I mean? It's like, they're, like I said, you can watch them nowadays and it's, like, kind of cheesy and it's ridiculous and stuff.
Yeah, and
but
they're
not in, like, a wink-wink sort of way.
No, they're earnest, really.
Yeah.
But they're not preachy at all. They're feel-good movies. But they're not. They don't really talk down to you either. And but no, it's a great movie. Pat Morita, fucking knocking it out of the park.
I mean, he makes this. Let's be honest.
This movie would not have really worked without Morita. All right, and he played Mr. Miyagi. And Mr. Miyagi he's basically Yoda. But they give a lot of depth to the character. Later on, you find out he has a backstory. That was kind of tragic and heroic at the same time. He was kind of a tragic hero figure, where he was in the U.S. Army during World War II fighting the Germans, but he was from Okinawa, and got the Congressional Medal of Honor, and I think his family was in an internment camp during all that, and then later on his wife back in he married in Okinawa. Cutie, and she died in childbirth.
Yeah,
and he lost it. So he never really gets over it. And you know, there's a damn scene where shit. What's the fucking main character's name again? Fuck, it's on. Got a brain lock.
Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel fucking finds him in a moment of his weakness. He's drunk and celebrating the damn. The anniversary of his fucking wife who'd passed away, and he's fucking crying over it and reading the fucking letter and shit and passed out on the damn bed. And fucking Danny kind of has a his first kind of like experience of fucking being able to like empathize with like something greater than himself, you know, like this dude, you know, this old dude, he went through some shit. It's kind of like his first step into manhood, that this could happen to anybody, even somebody who you really look up to, who's teaching you all this mystical shit, you know, with martial arts. Even he had a rough time, you know.
Yeah, which is, I think that's kind of cool, because yeah. It's like, at this point, you know, him and Miyagi were friends, and he was teaching him stuff, but that, him kind of, like, coming across Miyagi in that, like, sad, like, you know, vulnerable moment,
yeah.
It really kind of, like, gave him a new appreciation, and he really kind of, like, grew up. I actually really love that scene. And then after Miyagi, like, passes out, I love that Daniel, like, before he leaves, he just bows to him, and then
yeah.
I think that's so great.
Yeah, that basically what the lesson there that is trying to teach you is that life is tragic. It always is, because it always ends. It's just how are you going to play the end, you know? What are you going to be like in old age? What is it going to be like when you face death? And that goes back to all Eastern philosophy. It's their holistic philosophies. Influenced a lot by Buddhism and the Four Noble Truths that always have to do in the end with accepting your death. And martial arts, not only you know, karate, but also things like Bushido and things kind of like gangster and outlaw ways of the fucking of the East, you know, kind of like what was his name, Musashi, who was more of an outlaw than anything else. Even he said that, you know, the first steps you must take as a warrior is to resolutely accept the inevitability of your death. And that's what frees you from that pressure. Now just, you now have freedom of motion, freedom of deciding things. And when you understand Eastern philosophies, you see a lot of that theme a lot. Life is suffering. We suffer because we desire things, all right? And if you desire things, fucking, it'll make you, you're going to be disappointed with them, and fucking, it'll fucking make your suffering greater. So the best thing you should do is stop desiring things, and then you won't suffer over them. So in other words, kind of like an enlightened detachment. And that's really kind of what that scene was about, is that, yeah, shit sucks, and then we die, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't live your life. You know what I mean? You should kind of, that's part of the lessons of life. Because we're temporary. Everything's temporary. Everything's transient. And once you're good with that, then it's all right. And that is eventually resolved in the series, I think, more with Miyagi. Although I think Miyagi had accepted what had happened more. But he just kind of lamented over it, you know. But I had to see the other installments again to make sure. But in general, from what I remember the series, is that it made philosophical sense.
Rob says, the thing about part three that didn't work was how Daniel was so scared of Mike Barnes when he just kicked the ass of Chosen, a person with lifelong knowledge of karate. Yeah, that's right. Like I said, we watched all three of them like a couple years back, but we just watched the first one again. It's weird because the only thing that I had forgotten was that the end of part one, I was just kind of like, I thought it was super abrupt because I was like, oh, I thought there was a scene where Mr. Miyagi, like, goes out to the parking lot, and then Kreese is being a douche hat, and he has to, like, kick Kreese's ass, like, out in the parking lot.
Yeah.
But then, I think that scene was originally supposed to be at the end of the first one, if I'm not mistaken, but it actually is the beginning of the second one. So, I was kind of, like, confused. I was like, oh, it just ended. Like, I thought there was another scene. But,
yeah.
But that was actually, like, the first
one. I remember really thinking that one, the first movie was fucking great, and I remember really liking two. But I remember thinking that three was okay, but it had problems. And one of the problems that I kind of remember sticking with me is that he goes to Okinawa, and when they get to Okinawa, it's an Okinawa that never really existed. It's kind of like a theme park taking place 100 years ago. It does not look like a modern country.
Yeah, it's like, and welcome to medieval Okinawa.
Yeah, it's like medieval Okinawa.
It's like it doesn't look like that.
Hold on, this is kind of like a middle class or working class fantasy conception of what you would think an Eastern country would be. That's not how Okinawa looked like in the 80s.
No.
Maybe in the fucking 1880s, but not in the 80s.
That's true.
But they just tried to make it look real, real, something like something real foreign and exotic, like something out of National Geographic. And no, you would have went to Okinawa and saw McDonald's and Burger King.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and New Wave nightclubs. Shit like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of hotels.
Yeah, just like a regular ass.
Just like anything else.
That's like, yeah, that's always kind of funny. But yeah, somebody brought up that Pat Morita was known for being Arnold on Happy Days. Yeah, and that's like initially why they didn't want him. Like, he did come in to read, and he was kind of known for being Arnold on Happy Days, and he was also known as a stand-up comedian. And they were like, yeah, we don't really want that. They wanted that guy, what's his name? Tashio Mifune, I think is his name. He was in, like, Seven Samurai and all that.
He's in Red Sun, too.
Yeah, and they were we wanted that guy because he was kind of, like, more...
Gravitas.
Yeah, and stuff like that. But in a way, I'm, like, really glad that they picked Pat Morita because what he had to do, like, he came in and just talked in his regular voice. I think I mentioned this the other day. He does not talk like he talks like Mr. Miyagi.
No, he's a California guy.
He's from California.
Yeah.
So he just talks like a person from California. So, but when he came in and they didn't want him, they said, no, you're kind of known for being a funny guy and we don't really want that. So he came back in and he started talking like his uncle. And then they were kind of like, oh, okay, maybe. But I'm just really glad they did that because the chemistry between him and Ralph Macchio was really, really good.
Yeah.
It just seemed like a lot of the scenes of them where they were just kind of like playing off one another and they just seemed so genuine.
Yeah.
They seemed like they were really like friends, like in real life. And I just thought that was really cool.
Macchio was perfectly cast.
Oh, yeah.
What they were looking for was a guy who was a total wimp. But
yeah,
like a
they said
chip.
That. Yeah, a wimp.
A wimp that had a chip on his shoulder to make it plausible that he would seek training and seek to beat dudes' asses that were bicking on him. Most wimps won't do it. They'll just run. But they fucking did it right. He came from New York, I think, wasn't it? The character.
I think it was Jersey.
Jersey. Okay, yeah. He came from Jersey, moves to California, and some guys that rode dirt bikes that he went to high school with fucking started picking on him. A lot of it had to do with the girl that he was had eyes for in the movie, and really, you look at him a total mismatch. I mean, me and Jenny were astounded when we saw her. Like, man, there's no fucking way that girl would be with that girl. And the guys who directed the movie said that they wanted that. It was just not plausible. Dudes that look like that didn't get girls like that in high school. First of all, she looks like she's ready for her fucking debut in a porn movie. She looks like fucking Ginger Lynn or something. He looks like a child standing next to her.
Even though, like I said, they were probably about the same
They're about the same
age.
I think they were probably about 18, 19. But he looks like a child. He looks like a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
And then when you see her standing next to the fucking lead bully, what was his name? Billy?
Johnny Lawrence.
Johnny. Yeah, you see him standing next
William
to Johnny.
William Zabka is that actor's name.
Yeah, you go, well, that's plausible. You know, she'd be going out with that guy, but not fucking Ralph Macchio.
Yeah, because he was like twice Ralph Macchio's size.
Yeah.
And also, they said he didn't know karate. He had to learn it for the movie, but he was a wrestler.
Right.
So that's where, so he had done wrestling.
And the director was like, they wanted you to go to look at them standing side by side, Macchio and that girl, and go, no way.
You know? It's aspirational in some ways because it's like an underdog story. Yeah. So, you know, people are going to see themselves in it.
The director said it was like looking at strawberry shortcake next to a cannoli. That's what he said.
Yeah, that's what he said. Because we watched like a lot of the extra stuff on this. We're actually like really entertaining. Well, the thing about it, like the screenplay for this was actually written by Robert Mark Kamen, who also wrote Under Siege, The Fifth Element, Taken. Yeah. Like he's written a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah. And this movie was actually partially based on his own life. When he was a kid in 1964, he got his ass beat by a whole bunch of bullies. And so he went and took martial arts. And he ended up taking martial arts for like 20-something years or something like that. So it was kind of like, so he wrote about his experiences. Oh, and the first martial arts school he went to had a teacher that was very much like Kreese, where he was just kind of like, we're going to kick everyone's ass. And he was just like, he didn't really like it. So then he ended up going to another guy whose name was actually Miyagi. So the character is like named after a real dude.
Yeah.
But he was like, so the second guy was a lot more cool and a lot more balanced and stuff. And he learned a lot more from that guy. But I just thought that, and there was like another, I think the producer too had come up with like this article about like a kid and they had a single mom and like they got their ass beat by bullies and then they learned martial arts and got revenge and stuff like that. So he like combined the two things. This was also, I didn't even realize, but this was directed by the same guy that directed Rocky.
Okay.
John Avildsen. Avildsen?
Yeah, it's a masterpiece movie of its genre.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sports movie for sure, but it's just kind of like...
It's also a teen romance, underdog story. It's got a lot of good humor. It's got Eastern philosophy in it, or at least it's simulating Eastern philosophy. It fits a lot of what you'd find in Eastern philosophies. It honors fighting traditions of karate, so it's not making a joke out of it. It is a little bit deceptive about what those disciplines could actually teach you and what they don't teach you, but that's okay. It's an entertainment movie. You're just not going to take a person who's not a fighter and turn them into a fighter good enough to beat real fighters' asses. It's not going to happen. All right? MMA proved that. Okay? It's not magic. We'll talk about that later if we have to. But anyway, it's a good movie. With a lot of little life lessons in it. I want to see the second movie again, because I don't remember exactly what happened to it. One of the things I did like about this movie is that in the end, they show the reality that morality is transient. Everyone kind of exists in a state of moral ambiguity. In the very end, the bad guys have earned respect. For John, for Daniel, because he's actually fighting, and their sensei tells them to do illegal moves to win the fight just in the name of vengeance, even at their own sacrifice inside the dam.
Yeah, because they'll get disqualified. Discipline.
So in the final scene, when Danny fucking knocks out fucking
Johnny,
yeah. Everybody's kind of cheering him on. Johnny gets up and says, "You were right, man. You're a good dude. You're a good dude."
Yeah, and then like the movie just ends.
And then the movie ends.
Because the thing about Johnny and the other Cobra Kai kids were that they were jerks.
Yeah.
But because Kreese was so much of a bigger jerk, they were just kind of like, "Bro." Reel it back a little bit. And like I said, it's also one, they still had some honor where they were like, well, we want to win fairly.
It was dishonorable.
And we still want to win fairly, and we're going to get disqualified if we do what you say, so that's fucking stupid.
So the guy that they're looking up to is telling them to dishonor themselves in the name of vengeance, which wasn't a dishonorable
thing.
They wouldn't have won. They weren't going to win. It was just they were going to get themselves disqualified by doing it. And it's just like that was against the spirit of what their discipline was about. So their instructors tell them to betray the discipline. So that's when they're like, no. If you have to cheat to win in this discipline, then no, we don't want to do it. So what it is it kind of gives an ultimate victory, a victory better than just winning, because he converts the enemy to the friend into the friend. And that's the ultimate victory. It's better than killing the enemy. It's when you convert the enemy. Yeah, that's very Eastern.
I thought it was funny, too. I can't remember what happened in the second one, because is Johnny Lawrence in the second one, too, or no?
No, he's not in it.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he's in it.
Because if you haven't seen the series, the recent series, Cobra Kai, which has all the characters from the movie, like pretty much everybody came back that was still alive.
Yeah.
But they still have, like, this beef, like, all these years later.
It's implausible and ridiculous.
It is, but it's great. It works.
It's great, yeah.
Well, because Cobra Kai... They knew what made the original movie so appealing.
Yeah.
You know, so it is very heartfelt. It is very genuine. And it does take itself seriously. It's not really winking at it.
Yeah.
But it is, but like in a lighthearted, like fun, warm kind of way. Not like in a, isn't this ridiculous kind of way.
And the Johnny character is a lot more interesting than the Daniel character in some ways, in a lot of ways. So Johnny kind of carries the series. He's a lot more interesting guy. He's a little more conflicted. And funnier, in a way. Because it turns out Daniel ends up just being kind of like a regular car guy, and, you know, he's not real. He didn't change all that much, really. But, you know, Johnny did.
That's my favorite thing about the first season of Cobra Kai is that Johnny... He just ended up being, well, like a lot of people that were like peaked in high school type of dudes.
Yeah, he was a peaked in high school guy.
Where he just like, so this many years later, like he's still driving an 80s Camaro and listening to Brock, and it's like he lives in this scuzzy apartment with like empty beer cans everywhere.
Doesn't use social media.
Doesn't he doesn't know how to like use Facebook and shit.
And he tries to reopen up Cobra Kai.
It's hysterical.
It's good though. It's
but he's good. Like, he's such a good character.
He becomes a hero of the, of that. If you ask me, he becomes a hero of the series.
Yeah, I mean,
you're rooting for him too.
Yeah,
which I always like that because it goes back to, like it says, in certain ways. I don't want to say moral relativism or moral ambiguity. It's just there's different moral viewpoints. He's a good dude though. You know, he's
not a bad guy. Dude.
He learned his lesson back in that championship where his sensei fucking told him to betray the fucking honor of the fucking sport, you know. And then he was like, oh, I can't look up to guys like this, you know. You should win, but winning at all costs, no, not necessarily, no, not a good thing.
Yeah, that's
not within the framework.
I mean, any kind of extreme like that is usually generally not good.
Right.
Oh, you know what's funny? Stradock78 just said, you know you're getting old when you start checking out Daniel's mom. You know what's funny? That is funny that you should say that, because when we were watching this movie, Tom says to me, he's like, you know, when I watched this movie as a kid, because it came out in 1984 when we were kids, you know what I mean? He's like, I was thinking, like, Daniel's mom, I was just like, you know, she's an old woman. She's like someone's mom.
Yeah.
But he's like, looking at her now, he's like, she's totally not old. She's actually, like, pretty cute.
Yeah, she's cute.
Oh my, that's really funny.
Yeah.
You said that a lot to me, like, movies that you saw when you were a kid, and...
Yeah, go back
people,
and look at them.
Yeah, people like, that played, like, the parents and stuff, they seemed old to you, like, back then, but, like, when you see it now, you're like, oh my god, she's, like, 35.
She's, like, 30,
or something like that.
Right.
Rob says, also in Cobra Kai, Johnny was a drunk for, like, 20 years. Yeah, that's true. Well, Daniel had been actively training for 30 years.
Yeah.
So Daniel's level of karate should be much higher than Johnny. Yeah. I mean, the thing about it is that Johnny is much bigger and has, like, a lot more weight on him. You know what killed me about Cobra Kai, like, when I first started watching the first season of it, was just kind of like, not only one, that they got every fucker back from the movies that was still alive, but they all look great.
Yep.
They don't really look all that different, like, you know, 30 fucking years later, however long it's been.
Yeah, the dude that played Johnny looked fantastic.
I mean, they still look really good.
Yeah, Rob Macchio still looks pretty young, you know. He's put on some weight in terms of, like, good weight, not bad weight.
Yeah, I mean, he's big, he's filled out. But...
Yeah, he's filled out. When he was a kid, he was just fucking ridiculously
skinny. Well, I mean, he was just scrawny, he was a kid. But, like, when he got older, he filled out, like, so he looks like an adult. But his face, he still has that baby face.
Same thing happened with Anthony Michael Hall. You think of him, like, from Weird Science, but when you see him when he was in his 40s, and when he was in his late 40s in fucking the Dead Zone, nah, man, that's a fucking totally different dude. I don't know what cycle he hit, but he was big.
Well, like I said, he first started looking like that. The first time I saw him looking like that was in Edward Scissorhands.
Edward Scissorhands,
because he was gone for a few years, and then he came back, and I was like, holy shit. Yeah. I didn't, like, recognize him.
I put him in the hunk category.
Yeah, he got totally hunky. Yeah. Well, it's just, like, funny, because he was playing, like, all these, like, pencil-neck, scrawny geeks, like, in movies in the 80s. Then a few years later, he turns out, and then he's, like, a football jock.
Yeah, like a football jock.
You know what I mean? Which I thought that was, like, super funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, Slasher Fred just brought up Anthony Michael Hall. Yeah. But yeah, the thing about Karate Kid, I mean, this came out, 1984, man, that was a fucking great year for movies. So many good fucking movies came out that year, including Ghostbusters, which is probably my favorite when they came out that year. But the thing about Karate Kid was that I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it on cable, but it wasn't one, I saw it a few times, but it wasn't one that I watched like a zillion times. Like maybe like the John Hughes movies or something like that. I mean, back in the 80s, I probably watched like Pretty in Pink like 400 times and Breakfast Club like 400 times and shit like that. But for whatever reason, the Karate Kid I only saw like a handful of times. And I liked it, but it didn't like resonate with me the same way. But watching it now, I think I have like a lot more appreciation for it, I think, like where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know if it was because it was more like a boy-focused story so it didn't resonate with me as much at the time.
I'm glad that it's a boy-focused story.
Yeah.
Those back in those days, which they needed to bring it back, the younger you are, the more gendered you are. That just be truthful about it, man. Like when I was a little kid, oh man, girl stuff. Oh, you know, and it's just
cooties.
And it's everywhere. You know what I mean? It's just, and it's been that way for since the dawn of man. And sometimes to get through the thick skulls of fucking young guys, you have to show them a movie that's tailored to them. They'll and teach them stories that really are focused on them. Girls will watch it.
Yeah, I watched it.
And they'll enjoy it.
I liked it.
It's just that it doesn't really hit the exact same centers of the brain that it does with young guys, you know. I remember it, you know. Fucking, we were, you know, in high school, which you could relate to a lot of what was being said and like, oh, yeah. I'd do the same thing, you know, that kind of shit, you know, fucking, it's fantasy, but you don't really see how fantastical it is until you're older, but you learn from it.
I mean, obviously, it's got some, like, ridiculous shit. Like I said, it's, you know, it's ridiculous to think that maybe, like, Pat Morita could kick the asses of, like, 5 or 6 teenagers at once.
It's not possible.
Just the whole, I mean, the whole, I kind of feel like the bullies, too, were kind of, like, going out of their way, like, more...
Yeah.
To pick on this one kid.
Well, they were stereotypes.
That happened a lot in 80s movies. Yeah. And I'm not saying that, like, people didn't get bullied. They did. Yeah. But usually it wasn't this prolonged, like, and there wasn't that much thought put into it. Like, if you happen to, like... Well, yeah, like, if you happen to, like... If they didn't like you and you happen to wander across there, oh, let's kick that person's ass. You know, then they would do it. But it wasn't so much, like, whether they would have this, like, Machiavellian sort of, like...
Yeah.
Plan, like, for doing all this stuff. Yeah. And obviously shit's not decided by one big like sports thing or anything, but like I said, a lot of movies in the 80s kind of revolved around that because it's an easy 3-act structure. We're building up to the karate tournament or the prom or whatever the fuck. You're kind of like building up to one big thing at the end where all of this stuff is gonna happen and everything's gonna be fixed or resolved or whatever. Yeah. So you know, so it very much like follows that, which is pretty much all sports movies.
And what they would do is they would make guy ones. And I wanted to say before I change the subject on it is that as ludicrous as this. Fantastical as this movie is, in a way, teenage boys are in that world. It does express it. That's kind of the way reality seems when you're a teenage boy. Because a lot of that shit just seemed normal to us in that story.
Yeah.
I look back at it now and I go, no, man, that doesn't happen. You know what I mean? It can't happen. But you don't think of it that way when you're that age. Because you kind of have, everything is charmed and magical and, you know what I mean? Every day is a big deal and it's just, and it does have that, you know, feeling to it of being kind of young and dumb and
I think that's exactly why it works and why people our age remember it so fondly and probably why you know people that are young nowadays can still relate to it because those emotions are kind of like universal.
Now they had them, they did the same thing that targeted females, and that would be stuff like Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles, fucking Breakfast Club, you know what I mean? Which,
although some of the John Hughes movies, I would argue...
Some of them crossed over.
Yeah, I mean, Breakfast Club, I would argue, is just kind a more gender-neutral, because that wasn't really... That was focused on...
Male and female.
Boys and girls.
Yeah.
Pretty in Pink, slightly more female-focused. Yeah. You know, Some Kind of Wonderful, maybe more female-focused. Yeah. But he did other movies, like Ferris Bueller's Day Off and stuff like that were more...
Neutral.
That was just kind of like... Yeah. Even though that was mostly based on a male character, but there was also, like, you know, his girlfriend and the others. So I feel like that was a little bit more universal. But...
It was good writing, though, and good marketing.
Yeah, so anybody could watch it and get something out of it. And same thing. Like I said, even though The Karate Kid wasn't, like, my favorite in the 80s, I did like it.
Yeah.
And watching it now, I have a lot more appreciation for it than maybe I did at the time.
I think some of the stuff that is lost from the younger generations of today, what would be lost culturally, is that in the 80s, karate and martial arts, you know, like taekwondo and jiu-jitsu, was almost basically a subject about the paranormal. People weren't really sure what was possible and what wasn't possible. You didn't have mass media, you didn't have YouTube, you didn't have a bunch of information on martial arts. You would just see these crazy kung fu flicks from China going way back to the 60s and 70s. Bruce Lee doing these fantastic feats, and then all these legends about what is possible and what is, you know, what is actually possible with martial arts. It's almost kind of like magic, is what they're talking about. Doing the impossible.
Throwing your cheese
balls. Yeah, cheese balls and shit. And then you're like, well, only like a 12th degree black belt master in Bushido can do that shit, you know. And then we did another, if you want to know more about it, man, we did another show called Bullshido. It's on, it's you can just search for the show. There's a lot of bullshit in martial arts, but there was no way to check back then. And there were a lot of martial arts frauds that people thought really happened. And in the 80s, there were came out martial arts magazines like fucking Black Belt Magazine. And then martial arts girls, you know, like Cynthia Rothrock jumps in. And then there's movies with her, you know.
Like, oh, man, I watched a movie of hers. Yeah. I can't remember what it was called, but it was on Riff Tracks. Oh, my God, that shit was terrible.
Yeah, terrible. And then, and then there's like martial arts video games, like fucking, I think one of them was called Kung Fu, or no, what was the one with the two karate guys, and they go fight, and then, I don't remember the
Mortal
name.
Kombat.
No,
was it Mortal Kombat?
Now, Mortal Kombat said fight, it was in the, you go point, and it's just two guys, a red guy and a white guy, with a judge in the middle. It was real crude. It was before.
I don't remember that one.
It was before, Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. Some of you guys probably remember which one it is. But I remember that very first Kung Fu game. That blew our minds. And then Shinobi came out. We were playing the fuck out of Shinobi. And it's showing all kinds of fucking magical, mystical bullshit happening. So we weren't really sure what it, you know. There was no...
Those magical Asians.
Yeah. You know, the motherfuckers could fly. They showed it in the fucking movies, you know?
I saw Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah. And that shit was much later. We knew it was bullshit by then. Yeah. But I'm trying to put it into a fucking good context. They could kind of fool you back then. There was no way to double check.
Well, especially if you were a dumb teenager.
Especially if you're a teenager.
You're like,
right.
Well, maybe that could happen.
And there was no MMA. All right. We didn't even have Ultimate Fighting yet. And some of the things that they would talk about, like, yeah, they're, you know, Bruce Lee wanted a fighting with no fucking rules, you know what I mean? Where it's just fighting however you want, bare knuckled, you know, like, oh man, cage fighting basically. And like, was that legal? Man, that's against the law, isn't it? Yeah, dudes can get killed in that. And like, well, you know, dudes were getting killed in boxing too.
True.
Dudes were getting killed in football.
Yep.
Most dudes are getting killed in fucking car and motorcycle racing.
Okay. Yeah, big time.
So, yeah, why couldn't you go in there and just fucking fight, you know, beat each other up into submission? But I remember when fucking Ultimate Fighting first appeared. People were like, that was like almost like something slightly criminal. They were thinking, man, like something, what the hell? Well, in the martial arts world, before all that shit happened, in the martial arts fucking dojo mall dojo world, you know, where there's all these fucking legends that you could go off to the Far East and fight in these competitions, you know, it was all bullshit made up by a fucking old, what's his name? Who's that fucking
mother? Frank Dux.
Dux, yeah. Frank Dux made that shit up. And then they made a movie about that had,
Jean-Claude
Van Damme. What was it called?
Bloodsport.
Bloodsport. See, Jenny's memory's good. I'm not drunk. When I'm drunk, my memory's even better. Bloodsport.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
No.
I think so. Bloodsport, okay, is what they were... Bloodsport is basically what Bruce Lee was talking about. Well, that shit never really happened. What happened was this fucking MMA, which that's that. And none of those damn Kung Fu masters made it through the MMA. No. All of a sudden, they didn't want to fight when there was stuff like that. Now, in China, they got an MMA fighter. You can see the shit. You can see the shit on YouTube. They got a good MMA fighter there. And he challenged. He says he was on Chinese YouTube telling them that, nah, man, Kung Fu and all this. He goes, that's all bullshit. I'll challenge any damn master. Fight me and I'll fuck you up, basically. Well, they had some dude in his 60s, and he basically tried to pray his way in there and throw chi balls, and that dude beats the shit out of him in front of a fucking crowd. And then all of China fucking attacked that guy, and he almost made him fucking commit suicide. Because you have shamed China, China's martial arts. And he goes, yeah, but it's fake. You know, some people don't want to hear the truth. But, yeah, I didn't realize that, but yeah, China still believes the hype. Or they want to believe the hype. But the ultimate martial art, if that's what you want to call it, is MMA. if it doesn't work in MMA, it doesn't work. And ultimately, none of this karate, kung fu stuff works. Not against a trained fighter. Not against, and those trained fighters are in MMA.
Stardog78 said, Cynthia Rothrock should have been included in the Expendables. She got snubbed. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I wonder why they didn't know that. Maybe she didn't want to do it.
I don't know, old fucking, what's his name, fucking Seagal didn't want to go. He was afraid they'd make fun of him. Because they were.
Well.
They were going to make fun of Seagal.
Yeah, here comes Steven Seagal waddling on
yeah.
the set.
He'd need a fucking stunt double just to sit down. Got to go upstairs. Where's my stunt double? Dude's so fat that he just, they just show him from the fucking chin up. And then they got somebody dubbing him.
Yeah, that's so weird. What was that? What is that about? He can't even, like, he can't even be bothered to, like, talk in his own movies anymore.
Can't be in his own movies. I can understand.
Why don't they just have a still photo of him and put it in front of the camera? Then he doesn't even have to show up. And they just have somebody talking, like, in voiceover. And whenever it's walking around, it could just be somebody, like, in a fucking ninja outfit or some shit. So
he can't be in his own movies.
I mean, at this point, you might as well just put a picture of him there. Just put a picture of him.
Man. Poor Seagal.
I know.
Although I saw something fucking recently, I saw some recent video of something he was doing on YouTube, and he was being funny. He was kind of laughing at himself. So maybe he's
really
changed.
Maybe he learned.
Yeah, I think he was kind of.
I would have thought that
he was kind of lampooning himself.
Too old to like get past that.
I think he realized that the jig was up.
That it's like, dude, everyone's laughing at you. Maybe if you were, like, in on the joke, everyone would laugh with you. But, you know, I guess that was, like, hard for him to do.
Oh, with his paint on hair and shit.
Yeah.
And he's, although, I'll tell you what, this is totally off topic, but the Steven Seagal merchandise, like, old merchandise, like, old posters where he was going to go to some event and it's, like, Xeroxed, it's worth a lot of money.
Hmm.
They have dudes that will fucking collect Steven Seagal stuff. I think it's like irony, but they still buy it.
Well, remember that guy that's, I can't remember what his name is, but he's on Cinemassacre sometimes.
Yeah.
And that dude is like a huge Steven Seagal fan. I think ironically, but kind of not. Like, he has every single Steven Seagal movie. He has, like, all of this collectible stuff. Yeah. He even bought, like, the shitty energy drinks that he did.
Yeah, energy drinks, right, yeah.
Like,
Asian,
off of eBay.
Asian Experience.
The Asian Experience. That's there was two other ones, but the titles, the names of them weren't as funny as Asian Experience. Because, I mean, come on.
As much as I bag on Seagal, he did have some good movies. Some of them were good.
Yeah,
but most of them weren't.
But he wasn't
he did
even,
it to himself.
He wasn't even in The Karate Kid, so why are you even talking about
it? It's martial arts.
I'm just saying.
It's martial arts.
It's adjacent. Yeah. It's adjacent.
But, this is a good movie, and if you guys haven't seen it, I'd recommend it.
I mean, you know, everybody... I feel like everybody should probably see The Karate Kid. It's one of those movies from the 80s. I mean, it's iconic. And it's also one of those movies, too, that even if you haven't seen it, then you've still kind of probably seen it. Because there's so much of the, like, lines from it and everything like that have, like, you know, seeped into the zeitgeist or whatever. So, I mean, the first thing, you know, when this stream started, the first thing somebody commented was wax on, wax off, wax off. Like I said, if you say that to somebody, every single person on Earth, probably, or at least in the U.S. and in Europe, like, know what that is.
Yeah.
Like, know where that came from.
They're talking about Sonny Chiba. Sly was talking about Sonny Chiba. I remember that. Frank Dux is full of shit. Of course he was full of shit. He's a pathological liar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Danny Ghostface says karate is used in UFCs. It's definitely effective, but it's not the karate that would be considered karate back in the 80s. Karate of the 80s was highly formalized. The further you go backwards in time, the more formal and inflexible it was. That was the reason why guys like what's his name, entered the dragon, but Bruce Lee was trying to turn that thing into something a little bit more flexible, and karate had no ground game. You know, it had punches and kicks. That was about it. My stepbrother was a fucking badass at taekwondo. Would win all the champions of the tournaments with the size and tanfa and do all this. He could just stand in one spot and reach his fucking right leg up with his toe and just touch the ceiling and stand there. And he was doing that in high school, and he was like the best one out of their whole fucking dojo. Name is Billy. Billy Dumont is his name. And he got in a fight one time. Granthers was probably there. He got in a fight at a high school football game and beat up about four or five dudes from another school. It was Woodhaven. And then they all ran off in their cars. But if you saw the fight, he didn't use any taekwondo in it. He just fucking whipped their asses. Because he was real good at punching and kicking people in the face. You could stand there and talk to him. Like, you could be standing there talking to him, and he could kick you in your jaw and knock you out. But there wasn't any fucking forms or anything. It was like something you'd see in a UFC fighter. But had he done that in some of those little karate or taekwondo matches, they would have disqualified him. So, oh, no, you did, the form wasn't quite right, and this and that. The judges wouldn't have liked it. So what worked in those tournaments wasn't what actually you did in a fight.
Well, I think that's kind of true of anything. Well, and yeah. I think they kind of go into that a little bit in this movie as well, because, I mean, you know, Daniel, he doesn't, you know, Mr. Miyagi doesn't start teaching him karate as far as he makes him, like, wash his cars and paint his fences and all this other kind of stuff, because he's just trying to teach him muscle memory.
Yeah.
And so when you're doing the shit at a tournament, yeah, there's rules and you have to do shit like that, but I think it's good because it teaches you, like I said, muscle memory. If you're in, you know, if you're in that kind of thing, at least you'll sort of, like, if you're in a real fight, at least you'll kind of have some idea of what to do, you know?
In the 70s and the 80s, in that period, a lot of the martial arts that was respected and, like, official was on par with Chinese dance theater, which it was very similar. I think it's where a lot of it came from. Hong Kong theater, which is like, they would dance and costumes and do kung fu, but it was more of a dance. Same thing with capoeira, Brazilian capoeira. It's dance, but it's also kind of like a martial art. But, you know, fucking Gracie, who's Brazilian, uses MMA, you know, you're not going to be able to use capoeira on him. It's just, you know, you're just trying to label things as karate or as kung fu or this. It's just fucking fighting. You know, and to be able to put the labels on it, there has to be a visual style. And that was the thing about 70s martial arts. It was very stylish. You had to look like something stylish, or they didn't like it. You say, well, that's not karate, that's not kung fu, that's just fighting. You gotta kung fu fight. You know what I mean? So, because at the tournaments, there were judges.
Yeah.
So, MMA is not really like that. It's just fighting.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it was going to go that way.
Yeah.
I mean.
Right.
Because that's what people want to see, you know?
They just want to see who wins.
They don't want to, like, sit there.
They don't care about,
like,
the style of it too much.
Yeah, they're just like, hey, we just want to see people beat the shit out of each other.
And because of that, karate and taekwondo and kung fu, they had no ground game. They couldn't wrestle. All right. So, some people were going, like, well, what about Bruce Lee and this and that? Bruce Lee probably could go to MMA without any fight. Bruce Lee in his prime, if you stepped into an MMA arena, would get his ass whipped. Now, he could retrain, put another 20 pounds on him, and teach him how to wrestle. Just give him the ability to focus on more on some ground game, and Bruce Lee would have done well. He was good. But he was more of an actor. You know, he wanted to fight, but it would cost him money. If he got hurt, he wouldn't be able to film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I believe Bruce Lee would have been a good MMA fighter.
Yeah, I mean, he was in excellent shape.
Yeah, but he would have to have fucking trained for it and accepted and learned to adapt to something outside of what would normally be called martial arts and be able to throw in wrestling and grappling and shit like that with it, and then he would have been good. In his weight class.
Danny Rowling's talking about Elizabeth Shue and Leaving Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Leaving Las Vegas. Ooh la la, me likey. This was actually, I didn't realize, but this was actually her first movie. Her first, actually it was William Zabka's first movie too. The guy that played Johnny Lawrence.
Yeah.
And Ralph Macchio, he was in The Outsiders before this. But this was, like, his first main role. This was, like, the role that, like, made him a megastar, that where he was on, like, the cover of Teen Beat and shit like that.
The guy who plays Johnny, what's his name again?
William Zabka.
Yeah, that guy's a credible actor.
Yeah, like I said, this was his first movie, so. And he was actually, like, he was great in this.
Well, what I'm saying is after the TV series, you know what I mean, he could go on to do whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
I think because people like that guy.
I don't know. Like, I don't remember seeing him in a lot of stuff.
I don't think
80s.
He did a lot of stuff. Yeah, after that.
I mean, and until Cobra Kai
yeah.
came out. Like, I'm sure he was in other stuff. I just didn't.
Just don't really remember.
I just didn't remember it, or yeah. I didn't see it.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? I was looking at the Wikipedia page about this movie earlier, and it said that, you know who they wanted for the role of Johnny the Bully?
Who?
Crispin Glover.
That wouldn't have worked.
He
would have been funny, though.
I'm going to weird you to death.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It might have. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
He is. The thing about Crispin Glover is that, I mean, he gives off, like, crazy person energy. Yeah. So that kind of maybe has its own. But, yeah, I don't really see Crispin Glover, like, bullying somebody. Like I said, yeah. when I think of a bully, I usually think of somebody like William Zabka, like a big, like a jock type.
Yeah.
Because that's usually what was happening, like, when I was in high school. So I kind of feel like that's more. So I'm kind of glad that they went in that direction. But
yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think Elizabeth Shue, the only thing she'd done before this was, like, some bit like a Burger King commercial or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's where they saw her first. But, yeah. Let's see. So, are we? We're pretty much good.
Yeah, we're good.
All right. So, I guess we'll wrap it up for the weekend, and we'll come back tomorrow and talk about. We're gonna talk about the Jack Reacher movie.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise one.
It was good.
I didn't realize until I started like researching that. I mean, I knew it was based on Lee Child's books because I think I read a couple of them like a long time ago. But I didn't realize that only a few months ago on, I guess it's on Amazon Prime, mm-hmm. they actually made a series, like a Jack Reacher series,
yeah.
That's based on, because there had been like a fuck ton of the books, right? And yeah, there was actually, when the movies came out with Tom Cruise, there was kind of like a controversy, but I'll get into that like tomorrow. But yeah, so tomorrow we'll be talking about Jack Reacher.
If you haven't seen Jack Reacher, you can check it out, it's free.
On Amazon Prime, if you have Amazon Prime, yeah.
It's basically...
I don't know about the second one.
Tom Cruise as Batman. Basically.
Yeah, without the suit.
Without the suit. Yeah. It's good, though. It's just a straight-up movie. It's nothing really, you know, it's nothing outlandish or anything. It's just like a movie that Tom Cruise would be in. And he just fucking Tom Cruises the shit out of it. You know, but it's pretty good.
As he does.
But it's pretty good. Pretty good. I liked it.
Stardock 78 said, LOL, Crispin Glover almost took off David Letterman's head with a snip kick.
I remember that. David Letterman kicked his ass off a show. And I would punch. I would kick. I don't know what was that dude on something.
I don't know if he's on something or if he's just weird.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He's just weird. I love Chris McLaughlin. Yeah. I still love one of my favorite movies of his is actually Bartleby.
Yeah.
If you guys have seen that, Danny Rowling said any redhead nowadays is considered the bully in cinema, which is fucked up for gingers. Mm. Is that what they're doing now? They're making redheads bullies. Yeah. I kind of feel like back in the day, it was like blonde jocks were always the bullies. Not always, but usually. Mm. Or, like, I don't know, just, like, big, tough guy. Or, I don't know why I thought of this, but I was thinking of Christine, the movie Christine from 1983,
yeah.
where the bullies were just kind of those vaguely sweat hog-looking guys, or, like, those old, like, burnout-type dudes with the long, ratty hair that kind of looked like the Ramones or something. They kind of looked like that.
Camp guy said he said he found a YouTube podcast that had BTK with his self-taken bondage photos, took himself all tied up. He'd never seen it before. You never seen those, man? We've seen those. He got down into the damn fucking grave, dug that grave with the fucking, had the damn girl mask on, and he's fucking in his lingerie all tied up with something around his neck. And
what's up, Dennis?
Dennis was a fucking freak, man.
He was sexy, man.
Look, he was sexy.
If that's what you're into, fine. But don't be a serial killer. Like, as long as you're not serial killing, as long as you're not killing anybody,
yeah.
you can take whatever pictures of yourself, you know, whatever. Get your rocks out however you want. But
he was cross-dressing.
Yeah. Which, you know.
Trying to be, dressing up like the girls he was killing.
Well, not quite, because he was not really looking like...
He thought he was.
I guess.
He was trying
to... He had a good imagination.
Yeah, he was trying to empathize or something.
I don't know if I'd use that word, but I don't know.
He was trying to take their place. See what it felt like.
Yeah, it was like a really weird...
Yeah.
I know I've brought this up before, but Sophie sent me a book a long time ago called, I think it's called Confessions or Conversations with a Killer or something like that, but it's about BTK. And it's all, like, his letters, like, correspondence that he wrote with this journalist, like, after he was in prison. That dude's thought processes are fucking bizarre.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I mean, which I guess stands to reason, because he's a serial killer.
Well,
but...
yeah, what did you expect? Yeah.
Well, no, but, I mean, I've read some, like, shit about some serial killers. I mean, they sound like dirtbags, but they still sound like, I don't know what to say, like, relatable. But, like, the emotions seem like human emotions. Like, the BTK letters, I was just kind of like, what the fuck is this dude's deal, man?
It's fantasy. Just like... He's in fantasy. Fantasy.
Yeah, he just comes up with that. He had all these fucking... He had a very, very elaborate, like, fantasy life, and it was just, like, really alarming. I guess that's why. But, yeah, so tomorrow we'll be back, same time, same channel, talking about the first Jack Reacher movie. So hopefully you guys will come and see us for that. So until then, have a good rest of your weekend, and we will see you guys again tomorrow.